and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, March 11th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday, and what a day it is here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. It's always a great day, particularly when we have as many people giving us calls, purchasing gold and silver, and just calling and saying hello. And so we always appreciate all those conversations and calls. So it keeps us busy. And even when gold is not busy, gold was down. Actually, it was down a little bit today, so everybody took advantage of it. Gold was down $470 today, $1,294. Silver was down 3 pennies at $1,538. Platinum was up $1, $8.21. Palladium was up 21 at $15.39. The USDX today was down 14 at 97.17. Crude oil was up 75 cents at 56.82. And the paper markets today, after 200 points to the downside, only in America can they turn around to the degree. And, you know, it's all Boeing. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, the FAA comes out and says, hey, those jets are just fine to fly, you know, after you had the, I don't know if we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the program, but, you know, it's two relatively accidents, crashes, airlines, same jets out of Boeing, and but hey, they're still very airworthy, and so, you know, after that came out, you saw the reversal in the Dow up 200 points, 25,650. The Nasdaq was up 150, 7,558. The S&P was up 40, 2,783. 10-year yield, 2.64%. European Asian markets fairly quiet. And, you know, it's sort of like a typical Monday in the markets, except you had that big reversal. And a lot of that is due to Boeing. And let me go ahead and, well, for some reason, I lost my screen, Dave. Hello, Dave. Did I lose you too?
No, I am here.
All right.
Perhaps your screen was getting agita from vibes about the federal budget, which was released this afternoon by the president. His 2020 budget rollout today proposes that non-defense discretionary spending be cut by 5% while boosting spending on the military, veterans' health care, and border security. Now, the budget blueprints expected to be rejected by Congress, as virtually all presidential proposed budgets are, but especially this time around where Democrats now control the House of Representatives. Spending bills typically need 60 votes to get through the Senate, where Trump's fellow Republicans hold 53 votes. Democrat leaders in both the House and Senate immediately panned Trump's request for $8.6 billion more, I should say, to build a wall on the southern border with Mexico. You know, last year, as we know, a protracted battle over Trump's demand for more than $5 billion in wall funding led to that 35-day partial shutdown of the government. Melody, have you found it?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, Congress's refusal to grant him the funds led President Trump, of course, we all know, the national emergency, so he could redirect funds approved for other purposes to the project. And the White House and Congress must agree on funding by October 1st just to keep the government funded and open. I'm not quite sure with the debt ceiling, Dave, you know, what is the true quote-unquote deadline anymore, since they, you know, are doing what they need to do to fund the government, even though they haven't yet, I don't think they've yet increased that debt ceiling. So I'm not sure what the deadline is on that one. So
well, they're claiming it's September 30th now, the end of the fiscal year. Mulvaney and his deputy and Mnuchin at Treasury say that, you know, they can move different maturities around such that they have enough funding to get through the rest of this fiscal year.
You know, that's all just a bunch of bull.
Fancy that now.
It's just a bunch of bull. The one thing that I did like about what Bush said was fuzzy math. This is fuzzy math. And it can't get any fuzzier than what we have now, ladies and gentlemen. It's just incredible. It truly is amazing. I can't imagine what these people think when they go home at night. They probably wipe their brows and say, "Whew, we got through another day."
It's my thoughts exactly. You know, they probably spent 3 or 4 hours over at their respective party headquarters in their private fundraising booths, talking to donors, both large and larger. And you know, if there aren't any votes scheduled or committee hearings, they're you know, probably out at a luncheon raising, trying to raise even more money. But yeah, it's like the day in the life of today's member of Congress. Just crazy dysfunctional stuff.
Well, I mean, the numbers on these are just, really incredible. And, I'm no fan of the education department, but it looks like that would be slashed by 10%. A budget for a better America. I mean, you talk about I don't know if you'd call it an oxymoron or not, would you? When you have trillions of dollars in debt, a budget for a better America. Well, how about getting us out of the debt? How about some true spending cuts instead of taking us, to levels that we haven't seen ever? I mean, it truly is amazing. But this budget would eliminate the subsidized student debt, in which interest doesn't accrue in the loans while borrowers are in school. It also reduces the number of repayment plans for borrowers and scratches the popular, if challenged, public service loan forgiveness program. I didn't know there was a public service loan forgiveness. I didn't know there was a public service loan, nevertheless, a forgiveness program.
It's true.
Is that all in relationship to the student loans? Public service, you do public service, you can
Yes.
forgive your. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All righty. It's just,
Well, it's
our fine tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen.
more of the same thing. You know, the budget's gonna boost defense spending once again, although to how they're going to do it is a little bit, to use Melody's words, fuzzy. Acting Budget Director Russ Fault said last month that the new defense spending plan would be included in the Overseas Contingency Operations Fund, more traditionally used for emergencies. A number of fiscal hawks in both houses have characterized the OCO as a slush fund or budget gimmick to get around the spending caps, which have been in place since 2011, I believe. Also unclear is how the budget's going to handle mandatory spending on programs for Medicare and Social Security, which, as we know, account for the largest portion of the budget. The OMB did say the budget would propose more than $2.7 trillion in that's trillion with a T in spending cuts over the next 10 years, which it said would be more than any other administration had ever planned. I haven't seen that to see if they were actual cuts or if they were other gimmicks driven by economic assumptions, for example. In any event, you know, another budget battle is on, and you know, with requests for, you know, upwards of $9 billion for you know, additional pieces of the border barrier, I'm sure there's going to be more uncertainty in that area to come as the year moves on into the appropriations process. Melody.
And it's like, do you really believe that the budget would is proposing a $2.7 trillion in spending cuts over a decade? Do you really believe Now remember, it's just proposing. It's an actual, but hey, it's a good thought, isn't it? No, it's just absurd.
Well, they don't get to
Absurd.
a balanced and a balanced budget until either on or after the 15th year. Again, when we say there's little fiscal discipline left in Washington, I mean, we've been spending a good deal of time over the past few weeks talking about this. And to the extent, Melody, that our members of Congress reflect in some small way anyway their constituents' thinking, well, recent polls suggest that the deficit is not near the top of Americans' concerns when it comes to public policy. So maybe, here again we have met the enemy, and he slash she is us.
Yeah, you know what, it's true. And when you think about it, I mean, when you have the general populace out there head over heels in debt too, of course they're not going to view that as a problem. You know, most of them, as long as they're working, don't have an issue. They get to pay their bills. They don't see how they're not getting ahead. You know, they're just paying the bills every month and unable to save and so forth. But hey, that's good as long as they get to do their, you know, dinner outs and movie here and, you know, going on a little vacation. They're happy. So if it's no debt, if debt doesn't bother them, why would they think that it's going to bother and be an important issue with government? So, you know, and I hear all the stories that, yeah, well, the government can print as much as they want and so forth and whatnot. Well, you know what? They can print, but you're still going to have buyers of that debt. And my question is, when does the when do governments, I mean, do other governments and central banks actually run out of money in order to buy the debt? You know,
Well,
I mean, there's only so much money in this world. I mean, you have fractional reserve banking, and that's at what, 9 times now, 10, 15 times? I guess they could keep increasing that to some degree, would, I don't know, it's bizarre.
as a whole, they haven't stopped buying our debt yet.
Yet.
There's a market for it until there isn't. And that day will come, ladies and gentlemen. And that day will likely come sooner than later. And boy, it just makes so much sense to be prepared for that now, rather than too late when the price of gold and silver are going to be, on their way up above the clouds. It's never too late, obviously, to buy, except to the extent that demand is so strong and supply is so slack that you can't get it. That's the biggest danger.
And that's surely is what's going to happen. It happened before. It happened in 2008. People have short memories. You know, people, you know, don't remember that it was everybody was plowing into gold at the last minute. You know, hey, they needed to have the stock market drop. They needed to have Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns belly up before, you know, things went nuts. They needed to see lines standing out of SunTrust. People waiting to get their money. And before any, oh, let's get into gold. Gee. Gold's rising. It's up another $100 today. Maybe we should. And that's what it's going to happen again, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately. And I know there's a lot of listeners that, man, they're just sitting there waiting for that time too. And this time around, I really don't believe it's going to be worse than 2008 when it comes to the availability of product. And you know, it's I mean, again, it was for a gold dealer, it was an exciting time. It was frightening because you saw your country come undone. You saw, you know, the system collapsing. So to that degree, it was frightening. But on the other hand, I mean, my gosh, I was locking in prices, buying product, and with one phone in my hand, and on the other phone, I had the customer waiting. And by the time I could lock in prices, prices have gone up $20, $30 on $20 gold pieces. You know, and that's what happens in that panic-driven market on those $20 gold pieces, those pre-33s, those mint state coins. Yeah, they're doing crappy now. Their premiums are 20-year lows. But why do you think they have 20-year lows? It's because how they respond in these panic-driven markets. Anything that has these huge abilities to increase substantially during any point in time, yeah, you're going to have a little more volatility. That's okay. It always cracks me up because these people who sell mining shares and a lot of these other, storage overseas and all this kind of stuff, they don't want you to hold $20 gold pieces. But they'll be the first ones to tell you that the product that they're offering you is going to do you better. And it doesn't even make much sense. They'll sell you paper junk penny stocks, promising you all types of gains, and yet you basically could have the same type of gain with a pre-33 $20 gold piece. And we know what markets, we know the time of the market when they perform, and that's in a panic-driven market. That's when they go crazy. And and you have real gold and you get to take delivery of it. Good grief, ladies and gentlemen. I'm working with customers right now that have their money stored in, I don't know. I'm not even sure of the it's through, I don't know if it's in Canada. I don't know if it's in Singapore. I'm not even sure where it's at. I says it was going to cost them, it's only 1,000 ounces. It was going to cost them over $600 to get it shipped to the States. It's like, why pay $600? Just sell it out, take your money, and buy silver. That's what they did. But now they can't get the wire from the company because, in order to have their metal stored, they had to open up an LLC, and now this company can only bank wire to the LLC. And I mean, it's just, they have to get attorneys. They wanted to bank wire me, and I said, "No, nah, I don't want international funds. Don't wire me from internationally. I'm not going down that road. Just like I don't take cash. I don't want to go down that road." I says, "Just help them bank wire you and send me the money. No big deal." Well, we have to get an attorney and all this to do that. It's like, why are you storing overseas? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they probably read, some faulty information, from somebody, or were told that. Who knows? I mean,
Well,
that,
these
boy, that
dealers make up
seems.
scared of the governments, thinking that, oh, your metals is safer in another country, safer than the United States. What country is safer than the United States? They're all the same. It's good grief, ladies and gentlemen. Do you think that your product is going to be safer in Singapore? How do you control that? And good, and I'm not saying these are illegitimate places or anything, by no means. But ever have you ever experienced before a global financial collapse? I hear every day from people of how bad it's going to be, but yet they store metals overseas. Doesn't make sense. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
There's no time.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And I'm not going to continue. So, Dave, why don't you tell us about retail sales, please?
Well, Melody, it appears there's other news moving the markets today. This falls under the heading of not so bad, not so good. Retail sales in the U.S. unexpectedly rose in January. That was lifted by an increase in purchases of building materials and discretionary spending. But receipts in December were much weaker than initially thought. You know, today's report from the Commerce Department had little welcome news overall for the economy after a raft of weak December data, as well as a sharp moderation in the pace of job growth in February. January's increase in retail sales recoupled only a fraction of December's plunge, and that left expectations for a sharp slowdown in economic growth in the first quarter well intact. Retail sales rose 0.2%, and data for December was revised down to show retail sales dropping 1.6% instead of tumbling 1.2% as had previously been reported. The drop in December was the biggest since September 2009, just as the economy was emerging from recession. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast retail sales to be unchanged in January. Melody.
Well, you know, if you exclude automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services, retail sales rebounded 1.1% in January after a downwardly revised 2.3% plunge in December. So again, mixed numbers and anything to keep it going and make people happy, feel good. And
I don't know. I think what it does more than anything to me is confuse me.
Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't confuse me. What it tells me is they're just flat out lying. Yeah. You know, yeah. They're adjusting the numbers. I mean, just like the jobs report on Friday, 20,000. But yet, you know, they revised everything up to 300,000 the month before, you know, right after we came out of the month of government. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And they're just grasping for straws. They're adjusting. I think they're adjusting month to month to make one month look better than the other. No one's paying any attention to the 20,000 jobs report from Friday. I haven't heard boo-hoo. No one talks about that. They just, you know, again, they ignore the bad news. You know, they'll talk about the good news. And the only thing that we're ever told about about the economy is it's really growing. We've got a strong economy. Really?
Beg to differ.
Really, ladies and gentlemen? I'm glad you all have jobs, and I'm glad you're all paying the bills. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want to see a good economy. You know, hey, I'd love to see gold back at 250 if all things were relative. But we're not going back there, ladies and gentlemen. We can't go back. We won't go back. I know a lot. I hear it all the time. Well, you know, it was really nice in the 50s. Yeah, it was. We're not going back. We are not going back. We can't go back. And so this is the reality of it all. They've created this illusion. You're bombarded 24/7 on mistruths to make you think all is, you know, you're accepting. People are accepting a lower standard of living and think everything is good. Doesn't make sense. But anyway, let's go ahead and talk about consumers expect prices to rise more slowly. This is according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. A decline in inflation expectations. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. In February, that likely reinforces policymakers' reluctance to hike rates in 2019. Oh, yeah. The Survey of Consumer Expectations, something that you can depend on, published this morning as one of the Fed's price gauges that weighs the need for rate rises. It showed 1- and 3-year ahead inflation expectations were down 0.2 percentage points to 2.8% last month, and the sharp declines as expected medical care expenses. Okay, let me reread that, Dave. With sharp declines in expected Medicare expenses. Okay.
That's what it's telling us. Sharp declines in expected medical care expenses.
Yeah, when was the last time you saw medical expenses decline?
What were you saying about 1950s? Yeah. Oh, gosh. You know, stable and low inflation. It's one of the main reasons the Fed, you know, having raised rates 4 times last year, is now taking a wait and see approach to any more tightening in 2019. Now, you know, in the same vein, the Fed's also conducting a broad policy review. That's at the staff level that could result in the central bank welcoming inflation that is slightly, if temporarily, over its target. Some policymakers and analysts think the Fed now has far more ability to respond to upward spikes in prices rather than persistently low readings. That's because interest rate cuts lose their potency as those borrowing costs approach zero. Fed officials last raised their target policy rate in December to 2.25% to 2.5%, but signaled after that point that they would be patient before deciding future moves, just as the market looked to be tanking.
Well, you know, we had Treasury yields rose a little bit today after falling for 4 straight sessions, and U.S. government debt and corporate supply is also a big factor this week with Treasury auctions scheduled. And on the corporate side, debt side, 4 U.S. investment grade deals were announced today, led by BB&T Bank, Natural Gas Company, ONOC, Diversified Holding Company, Relex Capital, and Dominion Energy. RELEX Capital. Out of corporate supply, bond managers tend to hedge against large interest rates by selling some U.S. government debt. And so in late morning trading, you had the U.S. year note yields rise to 2.63%, up from 2.62 on Friday. So it's up, but no big deal, but not that much, considering they were 3.5. 6 months ago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, nothing more to report there. You want to talk about high yield debt?
Sure.
Sinking its lowest level since 2014.
The sum of all fears among those buying investment grade and high yield debt has sunk to its lowest level since 2014. Of course, this is according to Bank of America, a survey of fund managers, and that's even as the Federal Reserve Dallas warns about poor liquidity. And the Bank for International Settlements fret about damaging downgrades. I don't know how much is in there that it's kind of interesting if you want to finish up on that one, Dave.
Well, you know, even as those surveyed say credit is currently rich, they expect continued compression over the next 3 months. Yet in 1 year's time, more than 70% expect high-grade and junk spreads to widen from their current levels. You know, this as high-grade investors are experiencing stronger inflows, although less than, you know, was expected, while their high-yield counterparts have reverted to small inflows from record outflows. You know, The Sunny Shift melody, surprise, surprise, has the Fed's fingerprints all over it. The central bank's dovish pivot has served to depress interest rate risk and benefit the fixed income universe. Rising interest rates are now deemed the ninth highest risk to the asset class after having been the chief concern just 4 months ago. Interesting.
Very interesting. You know, I think this is too, I don't know what you want to call it, but we're going to skip to Venezuela. And a lot of that, I don't know how long they've been without power. And I'm sure all the listeners have heard about this being reported, but it is important. Much of Venezuela, Dave, I believe.
Yeah, including parts of its capital, Caracas, you know, remained without power for a fifth day. That's since, I believe, last Wednesday. Crimping vital oil exports, leaving people struggling to obtain water and food. That's already in a country with over a million percent inflation, people starving, over 3 million citizens fleeing to adjacent and other countries. You know, the center of this, Nicolas Maduro, president, El Presidente, he's blamed the unprecedented blackout on sabotage by the U.S. That's at Venezuela's Guri hydroelectric dam. And for today, he ordered once again the suspension of school classes and the working day. You know, sources in the energy sector, you know, which is OPEC member Venezuela's main source of foreign earnings and a vital generator of revenue for the government, said that exports from the main oil terminal of Jose had been halted by the blackouts. That's huge. The opposition-controlled Congress called an emergency session to talk about the power cuts, blaming negligence by Maduro's socialist government.
Who do you think has turned out the lights?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? Mother Nature? I have no idea.
Well, that is one way to get the people to turn on Maduro to the point of getting him out of there and putting in the Juan Guaido back in January when he was basically assumed the presidency after declaring that Maduro's election was a fraud in 2018. So, you know, we think about the people and the suffering and everything, but you have to think of the people in the hospitals, you know, that are struggling to keep equipment operating. I don't know how much food, I don't know how much food is rotting in refrigerators because, you know, people don't have a lot of food in the refrigerators, but your grocery stores, you know, those place, you know, the bigger places like that and everything. So, it certainly doesn't, no telephones. The looting has got to be incredible. It's got to be incredible. So
close to 24 people have died in Venezuelan hospitals since the start of the blackout.
Wow,
scary
that,
stuff.
That they're actually admitting to, and certainly they're not admitting. I just heard some reports on looting and so forth, but. But that's what happens when you have your power off, ladies and gentlemen. And I would think Maduro, if they keep that power off, and I do believe it was probably hacked. It isn't, you know, I don't think it's people because they didn't pay their bill or whatever. I don't know. But they certainly want him out of there, and they want regime change, you know, pretty bad. So. What else is going on? We got about 4 more minutes. Pick a topic, Dave.
Well, I found this interesting ironic, maybe a couple of other words come to mind after last week's discussion, debate in the U.S. House of Representatives. Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, says Israel is the homeland only of the Jewish people. That's in a new jab at the country's Arab minority ahead of early April's election. Yesterday, Netanyahu addressed what he called slightly confused people after an Israeli celebrity defended the rights of Israel's Arab population. Arab comprises about one-fifth of Israel's 9 million residents. They have full citizenship rights, but have faced decades of discrimination. On Saturday, actress Rodem Sela announced or denounced Netanyahu's frequent talking point that his political rival will form a government with Arab political parties. When will someone in this government tell the public that Israel is a country of all its citizens? Sela wrote. Netanyahu responded with this: Israel is the national state, not of all its citizens, but only of the Jewish people. So that's interesting stuff. You know, I wonder if Bibi will propose a new law limiting citizenship to just people of the Jewish faith should he win re-election in April. Things just got a little stranger in America's most treasured Middle East ally.
Let's see, how much time do we have left? Turkey has entered into a recession, according to two consecutive quarters of falling economic growth. Just another global country on its own that is heading into dark waters, heading into recession. And this is certainly a blow for the President Erdogan ahead of also critical local elections at the end of the month. And Erdogan has led Turkey through 18 years of continuous growth, making it a leading emerging market. But much of that growth in the last few years has come through unrestrained borrowing. Gee, ladies and gentlemen, does that sound familiar? The lira also plunged in value in mid-2018, and global investors' concerns and a sharp fall in consumer demand. And Turkey's gross domestic product shrank by 2.4% in the fourth quarter of last year compared to the previous quarter. So all the seasons were adjusted. So, you know, when you're looking at that fall followed a decline of 1.6% in the third quarter, you know, a recession occurs by some definitions by two quarters of contraction. And the recession arrives in the midst of this global economic slowdown that reduced demand for Turkish exports. It also raised the cost of credit for its businesses. You have growth in the European Union, Turkey's most important market, that slowed to a crawl. You have Italy is in recession. In Germany, they're close to one. We've been warning about a recession in for months as foreign investments in Turkey dried up over growing concerns about the rule of law as well about its economic policies. So, you know, hey, their growth was fueled in part by cheap foreign credit. So what else is new, ladies and gentlemen? Just another country that's been put on the list. 1-800-375-4188. We'll be right back right after these few short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com. And we do have a weekly newsletter, American Survival, is out on Mondays. And most Mondays, once in a while, I get a little behind, and it might come out Tuesday. But 99% of the time, it's Monday. And so you could subscribe. It's free. And, you know, we want to extend it a little bit more. And perhaps on the website, be able to where you can make comments and so forth. But for now, you just get the newsletter. It's only by email. So make sure you go to our website, dgscoins.com. And Dave wrote an article today in today's edition about wages, profits, and the fall of the middle class.
True enough, Melody. You know, ironic, but companies are complaining once again about rising wages and their potential impact on corporate profits. You know, the thing is, history has shown that higher pay doesn't squeeze S&P 500 companies' profit margins. In a nutshell, profits have rebounded from the lows of the Great Recession over a decade ago, and they're now at their highest level in at least a half century. But wages haven't kept pace. In fact, wages have been surprisingly lethargic throughout the 10-year recovery and only started to grow above 3% toward the end of last year. But they still haven't reached their pre-crisis levels and aren't anywhere close to catching soaring profit levels, which surpassed 10% in last year's fourth quarter. Now, labor share of domestic income has barely recovered in this expansion from lows last seen when the U.S. was pulling out of the Great Depression almost 100 years ago. Meantime, business profits have skyrocketed from 12% of GDP in the late 1980s to more than 20% now.
You know, from what I'm reading, it does look like 2019 is going to be less profitable, and a lot of it is due to wages.
Well, that's what we're seeing. I mean, 2019, our hearing, 2019 is certainly shaping up to be a different story than last year. Shake Shack's CFO Tara Comonte told analysts just last week that the company was facing, in her words, significant headwinds around labor costs. She claimed that's due in part to double-digit minimum wage increases in cities where their restaurants are located. And last November, execs at Dollar Tree said they expected pressure from the states that are increasing minimum wage as well. In fact, Dollar Tree recently announced they'd be closing almost 400 Family Dollar stores this year. Chipotle CFO Jack Hartung told analysts last month that the company's biggest challenge in the near term was going to be labor inflation. Executives outside of service-oriented industries are talking about the rising wage impact, too. Steve Filton, who's CFO at hospital management company Universal Health Services, said last week that rising wage rates and a tight labor market contributed to the company's inability to produce the operating leverage necessary for higher revenue.
So what dynamics are at work there?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, two factors appear to be at play. I mean, the tight market is one. You know, it's pushed, you know, that is pushing wages slightly higher. And the government mandated minimum wage hikes, in many cases, you know, being passed by city councils across the country, they're also forcing companies to pay more, as I believe in most cases, personally, they ought to be. But nevertheless, cutting into their large profit margins of recent past. So far this year, 19 states have had minimum wage hikes impacting over 5 million workers across the country. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute. Companies have levers to pull to offset any cost from wage hikes, and they're pulling them. Honeywell, for example, CFO Greg Lewis said the industrial company was able to offset its margin pressure from labor inflation, thanks largely to higher pricing and stronger employee productivity. Binky Chadha of Deutsche Bank said, when the economy is strong and sales are growing, companies can look for ways, you know, to up their productivity and pass on the pressures in terms of pricing.
Binky.
I know. That's a big word in my family these days.
Binky. I remember when I had that nickname, Binky. So what will the Fed, what's the Fed going to do?
Oh, my.
Let's get my violin out.
Let us count the ways. Well, you know, just as American workers are starting to see some real improvement in their hourly pay, the fear is that...
doesn't buy anything more because inflation, but go ahead.
Indeed, indeed. Good point, well taken. The fear is that, as central bankers usually do, the Fed will put a stop to it by raising interest rates. That's because wage growth is usually a precursor to inflation, according to economic orthodox anyway, and inflation is the Fed's main enemy. But not this time. I mean, leading economists say that in part because inflation doesn't seem to be accelerating, at least as reported by government, the Fed appears prepared to let the wage party continue, at least for a while longer. You know, last year wages grew by 3.2%. You know, at least the Bureau of Labor Statistics says so. And that's the biggest increase since 2009, and a full 1.2% higher than inflation. Inflation was just 1.9% for the year, according to the Feds. However, if you're a disciple of John Williams and his shadow stats.com and believe that inflation should be calculated still the way it was in 1990 or 10 years earlier, 1980, then you know inflation is certainly higher than 1.9% and is probably somewhere between 5 and 9%, give or take a few basis points either way. But taking the BLS's word for it for now means that workers, after 35 years of essentially flat wages, are finally clawing back some real added income. How long that's going to last, your guess is as good as mine, although probably a little bit better.
Yeah, well, it's all relative. I mean, you know. But, I mean, I don't know, even if tax cuts play into a degree of to where it would reflect higher wages, you know, the tax reform of last year, when I'm sure that would reflect a higher income. It would show workers with a better income, wouldn't it not?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not like the worker is actually getting raises. And to the degree of seeing his income rise, and then again, you have the inflation eating away. So, you know, it certainly is not trickling down the way it's supposed to. That's a fact. But the next thing going along with what you wrote, and it really is a good little article, the next thing that would normally happen here, Dave, is that the Fed should take away the punch bowl, maybe turn out the lights at the party, raise interest rates some more maybe. But several media outlets have been reporting recently that the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, appears likely to keep interest rates flat this year unless things get out of hands as the year progresses.
Well, our old quote buddy, tongue-in-cheek, Larry Summers of Harvard, former Treasury Secretary, Clinton and Obama administration alumnus. He said recently, Jerome Powell, seems to be adopting the white of the eyes of inflation position that he says he and many others have advocated for a long time. Now he adds, no need to worry about apparently tighter labor markets and wage increases until product price inflation is accelerating past 2%. And he says we aren't there. Well, it depends on who you believe and who you're reading, who you're listening to. as I mentioned just a moment ago, John Williams' shadow stats, not completely flawless, but he views inflation as being between 5 and 9%. I guess another way of looking at this is that it's probably a safe bet that it's certainly somewhere in between those numbers and the just south of 2% that the federal government has been reporting.
And you know what? I don't know, because you know we all know that the Fed might not like inflation, but governments do. When they're in the amount of debt that they got, governments love inflation. So, but you know, I guess it's timed. It's all about timing and everything. And you know, you have these old guys in there, the Larry Summers and so forth. You know, certainly they've been around, but they haven't been around in today's world where you have the degree of debt. Or is managing these huge amounts of debt really the same as managing a smaller amount? It does amaze me, Dave, that they keep this, that they're so smooth at keeping this going without any big knee jerks here and there. I mean, 10 years since the last one. I mean, and you know, how many years before the one before that one? I mean, it really is, they have incredible power and incredible tools that they have to keep this going. And of course, you know, having all the multinational corporations in your pocket, along with governments, central banks in your pockets, that it's all very helpful, I suppose. It's probably easier than what we can imagine. You know, maybe they're not going home, you know, scratching their heads saying they got by another day. They probably going home laughing and say, boy, this is easy.
Really. But I know.
So there was a paper published last week where three researchers at the San Francisco Fed said that they do not expect an abrupt jump in wage growth. So, you know, it's all doublespeak just to confuse the markets, I think.
It's sometimes, you know... You talk about, you know, somewhat disbelief that, you know, it's been, you know, 10 years since the last one. Well, you know, sometimes, I mean, you got to stay disciplined on both ends, because it's so easy to get frustrated and, cynical, you know, it'd be just so easy. I mean, it goes without saying that we scratch our heads about a lot of these numbers and some of our government officials, our policymakers' decisions. But if we don't stay in tune, and if we don't report what's actually going on, then it presents the opportunity for, you know, the policymakers to do more of what they're doing, but to do more of it in the dark. And that's when things get very dicey. So, ladies and gentlemen, we here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading are going to continue to stay on top of these issues, report to you as and when we see them. You might not always agree with our perspectives, but we're going to at least let you in on what some people wish were a tightly kept secret.
Yeah, but I think most listeners out there agree with them. They know, you know, our listeners anyway are very well educated.
Indeed.
And they really do know more than the GDP, the generally dumb public out there, general populace, I should say, on a nice term. But I affectionately call them GDP. But anyway, why don't you go ahead and talk about the abrupt jump in wage growth. We got about 2 minutes left, Dave.
Well, over the past decade, productivity has risen less than 1% a year. That's lower than the 3% average in the 50s. No one's figured out why, nor are they confident about how to improve that figure's performance. There's still hope for faster wage growth. That's Jason Furman, who's a colleague of Larry Summers at Harvard. But he said that scope may be more limited than Powell or any of us might like. So you can read the rest of this article, as Melody had indicated earlier, on in our newsletter, our online newsletter, which is out today. Melody.
The U.S. is going to begin fabrication activities on parts of ground-launched cruise missile systems. The Pentagon said that today. I wonder if they'll do that even after their... their cuts, their spending cuts. But this comes a week after Washington announced its plans to withdraw from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty with Russia. And Russia also announced it was suspending the treaty. Moscow denies flouting the accord and has accused Washington of breaking the accord itself. And so the Army Lieutenant Colonel Michelle Baldanza said that they're going to continue commence fabrication activities on components to support developmental testing of these systems. So,
yes, interesting development that comes after Putin talking about the Russia's new hypersonic missile.
Yeah.
Which initially, you know, his generals said would be sort of combat ready by 2021, I believe. Now there's some thinking that they're ready now or will be imminently. Destabilizing, very destabilizing, I believe. It's just sort of like this discussion we've been having about robots, which we'll talk about on Wednesday, perhaps.
Yeah, MGM to use robots to replace workers coming to a job near you. We'll be back. Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.